What Really Happened radio show. Putting America first, second, and third. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And welcome back to the What Really Happened show on RBN. The number to call is 800-313-9443. This is Ryan Dawson of War by Deception subbing for Mike Rivero. And I have Josh Blakeney on the line. And you were talking about the Palestinian Solidarity Movement at your college. And do continue.
Well, I was just adumbrating my history of how I got into the 9/11 studies, you know. So I was studying sociology at university, and I walked into a class called A Globalization Since 1492, taught by a professor named Anthony Hall at my university. And so he was actually at that time, I guess that was 2007, he was kind of revisiting the literature on 9/11. He had been a kind of indigenous studies prof previously, and so I think the idea that the colonized people, the Muslim world, got one back on the empire was attractive to him. And so letting go of the official story of 9/11 was difficult for him to do. But he did so. And so as his student, you know, I kind of witnessed him. I took two of his classes at university, and he was kind of beginning to show, you know, Building 7 and stuff like that in class. And so he shared books such as David Ray Griffin's books and others with me, and we shared links and that. And that's how I got into 9/11 studies. And so when my sociology degree culminated in 2010, he said, why don't you do an MA thesis under me, you know, as my, I'll be your supervisor. We can, you know, really get into 9/11 in an academic context, and rather than just, you know, denouncing universities as venues of indoctrination, try to revive universities' once good reputations by trying to actually do some serious, you know, academic work within the context of the University of Lethbridge, where I was at. And so by November 2011, I received an email saying, congratulations, you've won the Queen Elizabeth II Graduate Scholarship, one of the most prestigious scholarships in Canada, which is predicated on my grades in my undergraduate degree. And so there I was studying 9/11 skeptically with Her Majesty's imprimatur on my graduate. Uh-huh. So by the next day, the National Post was assailing me, and you know, the national media made a big deal of this, that the University of Lethbridge student had been given $8,000 to study conspiracy theories. I was being attacked by an individual named Jonathan Kay, the editor of Canada's
Wouldn't
main...
Wouldn't the official story already be a conspiracy theory?
Well, indeed. I mean, I would say that every lawyer, every criminal lawyer, every judge proffers conspiracy theories on a daily basis, because a conspiracy is merely two or more people coming together to plan an illegal act. And so being a conspiracy theorist is nothing to be ashamed of. I'm a proud theorist of conspiracies. I have nothing wrong with, you know, claiming that title. But, you know, so I found my graduate study suddenly becoming national news. And, you know, it became clear as I got into this that time and time again, the attacks on 9/11 skeptics emanate from individuals who are partisan to the State of Israel, who, when they're not writing hit pieces on the truth movement, are writing apologetics for Israeli foreign policy. And that's what happened with me. This individual, Jonathan Kay, who's now written two books. One is entitled Among the Truthers, A Journey Through the Conspiracist Underground of 9/11 Truthers, Birthers, and Vaccine Hysterics. So he tries to conflate
that all together, yeah.
In that book, he seeks to conflate disparate theorists and theories under the rubric of conspiracy theory in order to demonize anyone who's basically skeptical of those in power. He's written another book in his life, so two books in his career as a propagandist for aggressive warfare. And that book was written with an individual named Michael Ross, who's a retired Mossad agent. And that book is actually a kind of biography of Michael Ross, who, you know, left Canada in his teens, went to Israel, fell in love with Israel, converted to Judaism, became a Mossad agent, blah, blah, blah. And Jonathan Kay has written a book with him. So it's not a theory that Jonathan Kay is connected to Mossad agents. He's written a book with a Mossad agent. And that Mossad agent, Michael Ross, eventually also started attacking me through my graduate studies, calling my university to try and get statements, you know, because I was writing for Veterans Today and they had the occasional article on the Holocaust. So, you know, they'd call the dean of graduate studies at my university saying, and, you know,
Well, we're coming up on the break again. I'm sorry, we get flowing like this, but you are definitely connecting it all, Israel and 9/11. We'll be back after this message.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The Freeze-Dry Guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze-Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in seven different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling. And with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days? And keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee. And it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now. 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
And we're back. This is Ryan Dawson filling in for Mike Rivero of the What Really Happens show on RBN. The number to call is 800-313-9443. And I'm talking with Joshua Blakeney. And please continue. I'm sorry we get abruptly interrupted sometimes. But those who are salting you always have connections to this Zionist interest. Like this guy, Mr. K, he's written two books. And they've been attacking you. I myself, with a film I made several films, but one prominent one, War by Deception, got me attacked by the ADL, which is, of course, a Zionist organization, and two Israeli papers, which were just cut and pasting the ADL's baloney. Haaretz later retracted, the Jerusalem Post did not, but I feel your pain, bro.
Yes, well, I think your work probably is one of the reasons I actually know about, you know, Israeli involvement in 9/11, and you're sort of one of those people, a citizen's journalist, who actually bothered to do real journalism, realized that it was incumbent upon those of us who believe in truth and justice to do the media's job for them because they're so compromised and infested with double agents and triple agents, which leaves humanity in a quagmire where we have this kind of lack of truth, this constant mythology. I mean, it's almost like the 9/11 wars are taking us back to the dark ages of kind of religious wars where it's all based on mythology. And I perceive you to be someone who's kind of rooted in enlightenment thought, in reason, logic, evidence. And I think your work's really exceptional, Ryan, and I'm very pleased to be on your radio show today.
Well, I'm just subbing on the radio show, but I am pleased that you enjoyed the work. That makes it worth it to me. If it spawns people like yourself and getting an MA and studying under a professor about 9/11, I mean, that is exactly what we need to happen. And well, sticking to the facts, because I can't stand some of the crazy that's out there. And Israel was all over 9/11. I mean, you can't get much more condemning than to have vans packed with bombs and getting arrested or filming the first plane hitting and spotting it out the day before. But that's always missing from the narrative, unfortunately, from a lot of films. Focus, like you said, on the minutiae of the buildings falling and all, which is important. But if you want to find out who did it, maybe it was the people with a van packed full of explosives. I don't know, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, what the irony is, although the professors in universities are so scared to talk about this because they will, their bank accounts will be denied the funds that they would get if they went along with studying trivial issues, as most academicians do, or actively promoting the prevailing orthodoxy. So professors shy away from this. But when you actually get students in the room, I mean, we have three-hour classes on a Wednesday night, Professor Hall has, and often he has to go and travel to places, so he leaves me in charge. And I did a whole three-hour class on Israel's promotion for the war on terror, Israel's involvement in 9/11. And when the class ended at 10 to 9 p.m. at night, I wasn't finished. And I said, well, you're welcome to leave, but anyone who wants to stay can stay. And they, you know, more than half the class stayed on to continue listening to me talking about this. So students, of course, they're open-minded. They have no vested interest, really, in going along with lies that are, you know, ruining their futures.
And so it's the same rhetoric, too, with Iran. I mean, it's so Israeli-centric. And the Iraq war as well. It doesn't benefit the U.S. at all to put sanctions on Iran and to be spouting all this propaganda about Iran, not one bit. But we are so beholden to AIPAC and the Zionist lobby and power in the press that we are sacrificing our own interests and possibly headed to war with Iran. The same with the propaganda in Syria and Lebanon, all of Israel's enemies. That's what America's following. It's not just 9/11. It's all of it. That is our entire Middle Eastern foreign policy is completely Israeli-centric.
Yeah, even though Naomi Klein has failed abysmally on the 9/11 issue, because, of course, Naomi Klein wrote the book The Shock Doctrine, but then missed the most obvious example of the shock doctrine being applied, which is, of course, 9/11. But Naomi Klein, I came across a really good quote in The Guardian, actually, so it's kind of a useful source to cite because it's a good way to convince left gatekeepers and so on. And she said that what happened on, I'm quoting her pretty much verbatim now, what happened on 9/11 was the Likud doctrine previously applied to the Palestinians was picked up by the most powerful nation on earth and applied on a global scale. She says, the Likudization of the world is the real legacy of 9/11. And Naomi Klein actually wrote that in The Guardian. So I think that's a pretty good phrase, the Likudization of the world. You know, in my studies, I really got into, when I began to realize that 9/11 was primarily a Mossad operation, you know, I began to get into, well, you know, who really had a motive to do this, you know, and why would they do this? And I got into the history of the Likud party, you know, which of course stemmed from the revisionist current of Zionism led by Jabotinsky, who is well quoted as saying, you know, the Jews need to create a Jewish empire in the Middle East. And, you know, obviously Netanyahu is the descendant of that philosophy, that school of thought that rejected the more pragmatist approach to the genocide of Palestine that the Labour Zionists had. And so we see now the kind of Likud party coming to the fore. The Likud party, you know, under Sharon, formulated what many have now called the Sharon doctrine of seeking to destabilize the Middle East and break down the Middle East ensemble into ethno-religious statelets. Actually, many Israeli geostrategic thinkers have compared what Israel should do with the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire didn't have a navy. It used pirates to dominate the seas. We see these Somali pirates now off the coast of Africa. And moreover, the Ottoman Empire employed the millet system, which was one of breaking down into confessional statelets, the Middle East. So
See those the pirate pretext is this thing about controlling the Gulf of Aden. But you're right. Same with all this thing in Yemen. But we've got a caller, Karen, in Toledo or in Ohio, or let's see. Karen, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually just calling in to remind folks and everyone that tomorrow is the United We Win Marathon, which gathers people from all over the world in peaceful noncompliance, as we all know that in order to stop everything from happening, we need to stop, we need to step back, we need to strike, we need to tell them no more, we're sick of this, and we're not going to let this gang of 535 plus the president tell us what to do, nor the Zionist interests keep flushing us down the toilet, because politics is crap. Criminals run all politics. So Michael has a banner on his program. I want to thank you for all that you do, and RBN as well, and just let people know to tune in tomorrow to UnitedWeWin.me, add their energy, and let's start to turn this around with a real concerted strike.
United We Win tomorrow.
That's it.
Still be today, my time. All right, thanks for the update. Steve in Tampa, you are on the air.
Hello, Ryan. You're doing a great job. There you get some lively discussion going on. Appreciate
that.
Well, I'm
glad to have Josh on the program. We're going to really sling it. You have a question for either of us or a comment?
Well, it was specific. I didn't realize he was still on, but I just, you were mentioning some of the alternative media, and I was wondering what you thought of Press TV. Well, I'm going to ask you and then just hang up. But what do you think of Press TV? What do you think of RT? And specifically, Max Kaiser, because he talks a lot about economics, and I don't know too much about that. So
okay,
I'm going to call
both
up,
of us
right,
or
and let you. I'm sorry, bud.
Are you asking both of us that question?
Yeah. I just wanted to be in, that's all.
Hey, Josh, how do you think of Press TV?
Well, you know, I work for Press TV. It's increasingly referred to as the voice of the voiceless, because obviously all the perspectives that are marginalized and eliminated from the mainstream media that usually seeks to, you know, employ celebrity worship in its journalism or outright promotion of wars and of aggression. Sorry, I just got a Skype. I think Press TV is very important because it's illuminating the suppressed perspectives. For example, I just did a report that just went up today on the Press TV site on Reporters File to do with salmon fishers in British Columbia, the aboriginals who've been catching fish there literally to feed their children. Their children do not eat if they don't catch salmon. You know, the government's now come in and said, oh, you can only catch fish on a Wednesday because the politicians are in the pocket of the fish farm, you know, the fish farm lobby that are owned by white fishermen who don't want these indigenous fishers catching sockeye salmon from the Fraser River and selling it and, you know, having their own indigenous economy. And so that kind, those kind of people, they told me straight up, I'm the first journalist that's ever interviewed them. They were in tears because no media person has ever come to them. And so Press TV offers a platform to all those suppressed perspectives, to the kind of colonized world. You know, you think that, you know, as white guys from Britain, US, Canada, we were the kind of beneficiaries of colonization. We're the people whose ancestors came and did the colonizing. But for most of the world, they were colonized. Like 70% of humanity were the victims of colonization. Whereas for me, it was like a train coming west from Britain to Canada. For the indigenous peoples around the world, it's usually been like a train hitting them. And I think Press TV is really the voice of the kind of non-aligned movement. In 1955, all the formerly colonized nations in Africa and Asia and elsewhere came together at Bandung in Indonesia in order to form the non-aligned movement, because they didn't want to have to choose between the false dichotomy of U.S.-style capitalism and Soviet-style communism. Now, Iran is one of the main protagonists of the non-aligned movement in a contemporary context, and I think that Press TV is largely a media platform for the oppressed and colonized peoples of the world to have a voice. And of course, that also goes on within our Western states, where there's, you know, like the 9/11 Truth Movement. You could say that's a completely suppressed perspective because the mainstream media is controlled by the very people who have a vested interest in covering up the events of 9/11, covering up
certain things too in Canada anyway, and most of Europe. You're not even allowed to talk about certain topics, if you know what I'm saying. And just to get my two cents in here, since he asked me as well, obviously, fan of Press TV. I have Josh on the show from Press TV. It's for RT as well. Better, except for on Russian issues. And there are some shows there that just sort of have been bottoming out recently, but far, far better than our mass media. And that's just mind-blowing to me. If anyone had told me that as a child, that I would be watching Russian TV to counter the propaganda, that just sounded completely backwards, but that's what it's come to. And as for Max Kaiser, well, I'll discuss him and get Josh's opinion after the break.
As business becomes more difficult, control of cash and the ability to borrow becomes critical. Working capital cash is your greatest insurance and guarantee of financial stability in these uncertain times. Equipment leasing allows you to obtain the income-producing equipment that your business needs and pay for it with tax-free, ever-devaluing dollars. Money that you've already earned and paid taxes on should be sparingly used. That is your reserve capital, safety net. We are also able to buy and lease back equipment that you already own and have depreciated, thereby making more cash available for your present-day needs. For a complete, comprehensive explanation as to how this financial truth will benefit your business future, call Bob New Incorporated at 888-639-2621. 888-639-2621. Keep your working capital cash reserves and borrowing capability. 888-639-2621.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with Hawthorne, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder, what's a guy on Main Street to do? I've always tried to be an honest, upstanding kind of guy. But I must admit lately, I thought about giving something else a try. Oh, I want to be a pirate. I want to sail the seven seas, yeah, I want to be a pirate.
This is Ryan Dawson filling in for Mike Rivero in my final hour of this stint, where I was lucky enough to have a week for the show of WhatReallyHappened.com on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network. The number to call in is 800-313-9443. We can address the Max Kaiser, Josh, and then I have another caller on the line from Florida. Frank, just a second. I'll give my 2 cents first. Max Kaiser, I think he's a bit of a character, a little animated, but sound on economic news. The way he presents it doesn't matter. Everyone's got their own style. I really enjoyed him going off on these banksters about the LIBOR scandal. He was telling it like it is. Yeah, and his voice cracks sometimes, and he's a little wacky now and then, but you know what? It doesn't matter. His information is solid on economics anyway. I did not like his attack on Lou Rockwell. I think, you know, I was totally against that, but when it comes to economics, there you go. But for my brand, my economists, the ones I like more, men like Jim Rogers and Peter Schiff, Dimitri sometimes, and then Max Kaiser after that. Your opinions, Josh?
One thing I want to say is, you know, you have to always remember that if you're a dissident against the Russian government or a dissident against the Iranian government, you have the whole array of Western media venues, you know, waiting with their doors open to give you a platform to indict those respective governments. And so the fact that Russia Today doesn't talk that much about Russia, and perhaps Press TV doesn't include so many people who are offering criticism or staunch criticism of the Iranian government, it's not really a good argument against them, because they,
oh, no.
offer, they offer a platform to all the other media venues. And if you are actually someone who has a complaint against the Iranian government or the Russian government, you then have CNN and all the rest of the usual suspects welcoming you into to justify their imperialist hegemonic goals. And so I think Max Kaiser, yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, I don't know that much about economics, to be honest, because I focus more on the political, you know, what you might call political science and sociology. But I obviously have a basic understanding of economics. And so I find it very useful to watch Max Kaiser's show, because I'm aware of my ignorance on a lot of economic issues. And so I enjoy watching his shows, even though he probably, you know, gets this or that point wrong from time to time, you know.
I think that's good, too, is he's also bringing the rather kind of dry subject some flavor. Me, I'm such a nerd. I prefer the Jim Rogers style. But Frank in Florida, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call and everything you guys do. I was just wondering if you guys are familiar with the Oded Yenin's plan?
I was going to bring that up, actually, and we had a break. Yeah, Oded Yenin's policy papers predated PNAC, actually. And when Josh was talking about Ariel Sharon and the Likud movement, Oded Yenin, that's very central, actually. And that verbatim spelled out the war of Iraq and dividing it and around causing sectarian violence. The whole plan is written out. And that was back in 1979. And then reiterated in 81, before Wolfowitz and all these guys, these second-generation Straussians, Crystal and the Kagans and the rest of them, before they peddled their propaganda and their letters to Clinton and set up the Iraqi National Congress, because they personally, Wolfowitz personally recommended Ahmed Chalabi, even back in 1998 when we almost went to war in Iraq. Remember, Clinton bombed them after his impeachment didn't go through. He ended the war immediately. But before all that was Oded Yenin. This is the grandfather of the Zionist doctrine that just led to these modern wars.
Yeah, I came across a book when I was, you know, I did this, undertook a kind of simple intellectual exercise when I was, you know, getting into my graduate studies, and I Googled books written by Netanyahu, because I don't actually think Netanyahu's a puppet. I think he's one, you know, from time to time you actually get a politician who actually has a brain and actually does some of the plotting and scheming him or herself. And so I looked up books written by Netanyahu, and I came across this amazing book written by him or edited by him entitled A Strategy for Israel in the 19... Oh, no, sorry, that's the Oded Yenin paper. It was entitled Terrorism, How the West Can Win. Sorry, A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s is the paper written by Oded Yenin. But this book written by Netanyahu was called Terrorism, How the West Can Win. And it literally is like a manifesto for the war on terror. It's like a blueprint for the war on terror, but written in 1986, because of course one of the big psyops of the Zionists was to try and portray Israel's enemies, you know, because you could make a case that Israel has an issue with something called Islamic terrorism. You know, the fact the Palestinians might target civilians obviously stems from the fact that their civilians get targeted, you know, but the idea that Israel's threat from Islamic terrorism is actually a threat to people in Britain and Canada and the U.S., I mean, that's the main psyop of the war on terrorists, to try and basically globalize Israel's localized kind of worldview and paradigm and make Israel's problems the perceived problems of people in the United States and Britain and Australia and Canada, you know, in Western countries. And so this whole notion of, like, the West, right, like when we think about what's the West, it's really like the Israelis are really trying to incorporate themselves into the West and extirpate Islam from the West. Because anyone who looks at the history of Al-Andalus, you know, Andalusia, knows that Islam is actually very central in the genesis of the West, right? But what Israel has sought to do is to narrow the confines of the West, to make it kind of Judeo-Christian. And so when we see Netanyahu collating these different essays in this book entitled Terrorism, How the West Can Win, it's quite fascinating to see that he's basically trying to make the case that the West has to have a global war on something called international terrorism, right? So it's really, like Naomi Klein said, it's the Likudization of the world. It's globalizing the narrow and localized paradigm of Israel and trying to make us all view the world through Israel's spectacles, when actually, statistically, you're more likely to die in the bath or from lightning than from terrorism in the U.S. And even the FBI's website has indicated that Islamic terrorism only accounted for 6% of terrorist attacks.
Josh, we're coming up to the break. I hate to cut you off like that, but I'll let you continue afterward. And I got some 2 cents on that, too. Other folks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And we're back. This is Ryan Dawson talking to Joshua Blakeney. And Frank, are you still on the line? I got excited and jumped on Odin Eden and started answering, yeah, but I feel like you had more to say.
Well, no, that's fine. I wanted to get that word out because a lot of the other hosts in alternative media never mentioned that plan, and it seems like they don't either know about it or they're intentionally not covering that. And I'd like to get the word out so that your listeners can kind of Google that and download that before it gets sanitized by the Mossad and other Zionists, which,
I'll just type his name in and write anti-neocons. I've been writing about it for years and made two films about it. So, yeah, but I'm glad you brought it up because I actually meant to, and the commercial threw me off, and so it was perfect timing.
Great. That was it.
All right. Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
But, Josh, you also got cut off by the break there. If you wanted to continue on what you were explaining, please do, and then I had some more to add.
Well, we're just discussing the origins of the war on terror. I mean, that's actually what my thesis, which I'm still working on, is. That's the rubric under which it's been formulated, the origins of the global war on terror. What were the origins of the global war on terror?
When we see, and you're talking about Beebe's book.
Yeah, there was, of course, preceding that, there was the Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism in June 1979. And then I guess that, you know, I kind of view that
as the same year as one of Odin's papers as well.
Yes, yes. So then, you know, and so he's a, you know, geostrategic thinker who really laid it out in the most explicit and lucid of ways what's rational from an Israeli point of view to do. And from a Zionist point of view, obviously, their goal all along has been to seek to attain regional hegemony in the Middle East, not allow any competing hegemons to exist in the Middle East. And many would say that runs up against what would be rational from a U.S. national interest, which would be to prop up competing hegemons in order to foment stability in the Middle East, where the Zionists would want instability to weaken and have the Arabs quarreling and feuding. The oil companies and what was often called the Eisenhower Doctrine was always one of trying to police the Middle East in order to create stability. Because if I say, look, Ryan, I've got an oil company. Do you want to invest in my oil company? I'm going to go to Rwanda where there's a civil war and all your stuff's going to, all the infrastructure you're investing
in. Risk blowing up the pipelines and things.
Lost. And likewise, the oil companies only would want, people would only want to invest in an oil company if you can guarantee you're taking it to somewhere where there's, you know, a good Arab potentate making sure there's no instability in the region. Now, the Zionists want the complete opposite, which is where the left is often failing by saying that, you know, Israel's just a tool of U.S. imperialism, because actually it's quite obvious that Israel jeopardizes U.S. imperial interests in the Middle East in international relations.
Or even peaceful economic interests as well. I do want to point out, you were talking about Eisenhower. You know, he was the last one when, after the Levant affair, when Israel pulled that false flag stunt in Egypt, and then they ended up getting invaded anyway. The French and the British ganged up. This was all about over the Suez Canal and the Anwar Dam and yada yada. But my point is, Eisenhower came in and decided, all right, we're going to have peace troops here for the next 10 years. So by the time that went through his court and everything, this is 1957. The troops were there for 10 years. And exactly 5 days after they were removed in 1967, Israel again attacked Egypt immediately as soon as the international forces were gone. And of course, they claimed the Egyptians were massing on their borders. Russian satellite photos prove otherwise. Israel started that war, and that's also when they attacked USS Liberty, which I was talking about at the beginning of the show. So this is this long narrative. There's a timeline. There's a timeline of the Middle East on my page. And Josh is elaborating more in detail today, but that's what he means by from Eisenhower. But do continue.
Well, yes, and indeed, of course, you just mentioned the Levant affair and then the subsequent Suez Canal crisis, as we're taught to call it in the West. And you know what that, you know, that's what happened, right? I mean, you saw France, Israel, and Britain collaborating, and the US was coming in actually to try and create stability and put Israel in its place, right? And so you see, even from day one, you know, after the creation of Israel, there's this chasm between what would be the national interest of Israel and the national interest of the United States. And so time and time again, these historical occurrences illustrate for us that the US and Israel have divergent interests in the Middle East. Now, the U.S. in international relations, the jargon phrase is, they call it offshore balancing, where the U.S.'s form of imperialism was kind of more benign and more informal, where, yeah, if you exclude the Vietnam War and these, you know, the occasional invasions they did, most of the time they intervened indirectly by propping up local compradors, local puppets. And that, if you ask, you know, I asked Webster Tarpley this when I was with him the other day. I was saying, you know, you're saying what's going on in the Middle East, this post 9/11 interventionism and social engineering in the Middle East. You're saying this is just an extension of U.S. Cold War policy. But I said, how many countries did the U.S. invade in the Middle East in the Cold War? You know, the Middle East is obviously the jewel in the crown of the American empire. I said, how many countries did they intervene in overtly? And they didn't, right? It was Gulf War number one, which George Bush.
Well, that guy just is an apologist. He doesn't want to mention Israel in any aspect about 9/11. I do want to point out before I forget, though, the Levant affair, and I'm not a fan of Pincus Levant, but he was actually set up, the defense minister that's been named after, or Operation Susanna, if you want to call it that. But it was actually Colonel Benjamin Gavili who set up and forged his signature. He signed Levant's signature to get the rest of them in on that. And then of course, bomb went prematurely off in Philip Mason's jacket, and then they unraveled the whole thing. But it wasn't really Levant, so just getting that out. We should probably start calling it the Benjamin Gavili affair, maybe, or Operation Susanna. But that's just a little, you know, I just want to stay on track with the truth there about Levant. But you're so right in what you were saying. And how many did they invade in the Middle East during the Cold War? Didn't. It mostly focused on Central America and just using the excuse of communism to go steal resources.
But even in Latin America, it was usually death squads, right? Like, it's usually the U.S. controlled the world. They call it offshore balancing. A good example is, so the U.S. wants stability, right? So Hitler emerges in World War II, creates instability in Europe. So then you see the Lend-Lease Agreement, right, where they're starting to fund Britain in order to create stability again in Europe. The U.S. is there because it's a global empire. And I mean, this is the way it's always been, is global empires have wanted stability, and you get local elites who don't really like being treated merely as one vested interest and seeing the empire collaborating with the natives. I mean, I'm someone who, I don't really romanticize the American Revolution. If you actually look at the history of the American Revolution, it's quite similar to the Zionists kind of trying to secede from the American empire and control the Middle East, where you had a global British empire who was doing dealings with the Native Americans, was putting the white sort of manifest destiny, we're God's chosen people types in the 13 colonies, in their place. And they didn't like that. They didn't like King George doing dealings with the natives. The reason they had to do taxation without representation was because they had to put this huge military down the western flank of the 13 colonies in order to prevent these crazed settlers from going in and killing all the Indians. If you even look in the Declaration of Independence, you see King George did bring on the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is the undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. Likewise, in South Africa, the Afrikaners, they disdained the British doing dealings with the blacks, trying to give the blacks some limited rights. If you read Nelson Mandela's autobiography, you see he says, oh yeah, I could go to university under the British system, because the British system was historically mercantilist. They wanted to develop the mother country of Britain, and therefore it was rational not to develop and industrialize in the colonies, but rather to do dealings with the natives, try and co-opt the natives, and you get these local white elites who don't like it. Similarly, in the American empire, they've been doing dealings with these Arab leaders who are, you know, that's fine if you're in an oil company ensconced in Houston and Dallas. But if you're in Tel Aviv, that's disastrous, because these Arab strongmen who get funded and armed by these oil companies in order to create stability in the region invariably sponsor the Palestinian resistance, as Saddam Hussein is. And moreover, may even Hezbollah. Turn their weapons on the Israeli cuckoo in the nest, as Saddam Hussein did in 1991, where he fired 31 Scud missiles at Israel. And there's many even saying that George Bush Sr., even and the U.S. Foreign policy establishment, even egged on Saddam Hussein to invade Kuwait in the Cold War, invade Kuwait, and didn't want to actually go and extirpate.
In the first Gulf War, yeah.
Because Kuwait has a relationship to Iraq, as Northern Ireland does to Ireland. It was carved out by imperialists, and therefore for Iraq to invade Kuwait and try to reincorporate it into the greater Iraqi state, it would be like the Republic of Ireland invading...
And Saddam, too, had support the whole time from the time he was exiled to Egypt on. They wanted the Ba'athists to push out what they saw as those favoring the communists in the USSR. And so he, you know, prior to that, so this is back in the 60s, you know, so he puts him in there, you know, right after the revolution in Iran, suddenly Saddam's in charge, the CIA-supported boy Ba'athist in Iraq, and almost immediately they go to war for the next 8 years.
Yes, and so it becomes obvious that it's all right for the U.S., you know, they're sitting in Houston, Dallas, Washington, New York, to be propping up these Arab strongmen. But if you're in Israel, it's pretty disastrous. And so yet again, you see, and so I view 9/11 as largely an attempt by Israel to seek to align the U.S. with Israeli foreign policy, Likudnik foreign policy, at a time where it was going to be rational after the Cold War is over. I mean, you could make a case in the Cold War, Israel did something for the Americans in the sense that they both had a convergence of interest in suppressing Arab nationalism, you know, Ba'athist, you know, sort of the genuine elements of Arab socialism or Arab pan-Arabist thought. Of course, the U.S. doesn't have a vested interest in having its own Arab potentates, its own stooges, but destabilized. They would prefer them to be buttressed. And so Israel obviously has a vested interest in there being no hegemons, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Assad in Syria, no competing hegemons, or even in Iran, the U.S. would, of course, want hegemons in the region as long as it was...
And this is explicitly spelled out on their own policy papers. We mentioned Odin Yinon, we mentioned BB, and I mentioned PNAC, but also Richard Perle, if you want to talk about Syria, in the Israeli strategic papers themselves, ISSPAs, he's writing the Israeli Clean Break papers about first rolling back Saddam Hussein, what they have to do first. As Pat Buchanan said, the road to Damascus leads through Baghdad. And then going after Syria. And he explained explicitly how to do it, this Free Syrian Army tactic, all these different groups, Sunni groups, et cetera, which they would spice up from Jordan, Lebanon, and surrounding areas and involving Turkey. This is all spelled out in policy papers written by Israeli Zionist Pearl, of course, was in the Defense Department, head of policy, and all involved in the lies in that ran up to Iraq as well. But in all of their think tanks, they openly admit this. It's like a modern Mein Kampf. You don't have to speculate about it. They're telling you exactly what Josh is saying about destabilization, factional infighting. It's all spelled out in black and white. But they are just banking on people, you know, they're not worried about it. They're not going to read, so they're not worried about it at all.
Well, and then, of course, you look at South Africa, that's analogous to the dilemmas and the predicaments that the Zionists would have had after the Cold War. You know, when that white apartheid state in South Africa, when it was expedient for the United States to support it, offer vetoes at its behest in the United Nations and help it, you know, to suppress African self-determination in countries like Angola and that in the Cold War, you know, it was expedient for the U.S. to do so. But when it became embarrassing for the U.S. to be supporting a reactionary state in South Africa, they abandoned them and cast them adrift. And I think the Zionists were probably realizing that whereas in the Cold War there was some kind of modus vivendi, some...
Well, everyone abandoned South Africa except for one little country, and that was Israel. And they benefited greatly. Everyone else has got this embargo and doesn't want to trade with them to try and end apartheid. Israel continues to do so. But if you're the only one, if you're the only market left, you can make bank. And that's what they did. They completely exploited them and continued to financially support an apartheid system. But, of course, they have their own apartheid in Israel with the Palestinians.
Well, indeed. And so I think what 9/11 was about was the realization by the Israelis that the U.S. would slowly but surely, you know, realize that it was bad for it to be supporting Israel because it alienates all those people who have the oil, who are the Arabs, the majority in the Middle East.
And the Persians, yeah.
Slowly, right. The U.S. would begin to realize it wasn't really in its interest to continue supporting this Jewish state in the Middle East and that they would stop doing so. And so what 9/11 did was demonize Israel's enemies in the eyes of the American people. And so I view, going back to my background in the pro-Palestinian movement, you know, they often want to bring in speakers from England and other countries to do tours of Canada or the United States to talk about issues such as, Palestinian rights in Israel or the lack thereof, issues like that. But, you know, I say, why don't you, you know, our goal is to get North Americans to empathize with the Palestinians or at least sympathize with the Palestinians. Why don't we bring in speakers who talk about Israeli involvement in 9/11? Because then you can tell North American middle class people who normally might not give a damn about this Palestinians, you can tell them, look, not only are the Palestinians victims of Zionist terrorism, you were victims of Zionist terrorism on 9/11. And I think 9/11 would be the key to
USS Liberty, too.
Well, and the USS Liberty and other incidents. But I think that, you know, if you could get North American people to realize that they're victims of Zionism, whether it's through lobbying of their politicians or, you know, through the 9/11 false flag attack where 3,000 of their compatriots were killed on 9/11 by Zionists, then you might get the North American people to start to empathize with those victims of Zionist terrorism in the Middle East. And I think that 9/11 can be the key for the pro-Palestinian movement. And so I often have frustrations with the 9/11 truth movement, so-called, who often shy away from the evidence of Israeli involvement in 9/11 because being called a conspiracy theorist is bad enough, but to get called an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist is more than most can handle. But then, likewise, whereas people in the pro-Palestinian movement actually do deal with the vibrant debate that's gone on since the publication of Walton Mearsheimer's book, the Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, you know, does the Zionist tail wag the American dog? You know, you have people like Chomsky who say, no, it doesn't. You have people like Finkelstein who say, I'm kind of on the fence. It's a bit of both. And then you have...
Finkelstein's position is you can't tell where one starts, the other stops, because what really is running the show there in the MIC... It's got so much overlap that it's like just one tail, really. You know, that's his thing. I've talked to him at length about that, but continue.
The movement does actually at least deal with that debate, whereas the truth movement, it's like, okay, so we're dealing, you know, because I think the thing we have to remember is that academics who might say, you know, come out and say, oh, I think the U.S. government may have allowed these Islamists to attack themselves on 9/11, like some LIHOP kind of watered down version of 9/11 skepticism. Within the context of universities, those guys are radicals, right? So people like David Ray Griffin and others are kind of like real radicals in the context of the academy. But when you get into everyday life where you have working class citizen journalists, you know, actually speaking the whole truth about 9/11, a lot of the so-called leaders of the 9/11 truth movement are actually not that effective. And so I see how the 9/11 Truth Movement, yeah, it deals with Building 7 and has these endless debates about the science of 9/11.
Smynisha, they're missing the whole picture. I mean, you've got to look at the Iraq War and the anthrax and everything before and after 9/11, and it's very clear. You cannot just be like, Building 7 fell too fast and wasn't hit by a plane. That just tells you what didn't happen. It doesn't tell you what happened, who did or why, or anything else.
Well, I think you get sincere people who got into this, you know, do-gooders, and then they suddenly realize, oh, shit, Israel's involved in this.
watch the four-letter words.
And so you get these people who then just get into endless debates about the science because they know deep down that they're scared to get into talking about Zionism and Israel, because that's really where the 9/11 science leads you. You know, science is only useful if it's used as evidence to indict those in the political realm who did the false flag attack. When you get into who the neocons were, the preponderance of neocons were Jewish Zionists. They endlessly go on about changing.
We got the pump music coming, but we're going to wrap it up after this break and talk about the neocons, Zionists, and the joint operation of 9/11 as a false flag between the U.S. factions and Israel against its own people.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcasts, as well as a contest corner where we'll raffle different prizes to our listeners. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Working two jobs, ends never seem to meet. She often goes hungry, so her babies can't eat. The fatherless son wears torn clothes to school. We're making fun of him's the only golden rule. She doesn't know she's a favorite.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is the What Really Happened show. I'm Ryan Dawson, subbing for Mike Rivera. The number to call is 800-313-9443. We only have about 3 minutes left. I'm talking to Joshua Blakeney. Did the music go out?
Hello?
Oh, hey. I had a little disconnection problem there.
I'm still here.
Oh, sorry. I was on my end. I just lost all sound and everything. Anyway, we got to wrap things up in 3 minutes. 9/11 is such a beast of a topic. I mean, when people ask me about it, I hate sloganeering, just an inside job, because it wasn't even clearly just the inside. It's in and outside. There's lots of factions involved. It takes me about 3 hours and change to 4 hours to really explain it. I don't like just saying something, and you can't sloganeer something this complicated. So it's why you have to have a conversation. It's why I bring people like Joshua on. So we start hashing it out. We could do it chronologically, so we're not going to be able to finish this in the next 2 minutes or so. But if you want to know more about the factual things about 9/11 and not just running in circles about saying the building fell too fast or no building ever fell by fire or just stuff that's just really class D arguments, you know, not really giving you much at all, then go see War by Deception. Go see 9/11 and the Cover-Up. Go watch Josh on Press TV. Or do you have some sites you can recommend, Josh, for your own work?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say, Ryan, that, you know, I'd love to collaborate with you in the future, make some YouTubes, and maybe even incorporate you into some of my Press TV reports. I have the function of using, you know, phone interviews in my reports from time to time. And so I'd definitely like to, give you a platform if I'm able to do that, because I think what you're doing is very important. And as I say, I attribute a lot of my analysis to you having the courage early on. You know, I mean, a lot of people, it's kind of like after World War II, you know, a lot of people said, oh,
I got attacked bad when I said that back years and years ago. In 2004, I was throwing in the rock and 9/11 together, and man, I got assaulted from that. Not anymore, though.
I think you and sort of Kevin and people who really pioneered this, I came along a few years later where maybe it, you know, a few years later these days, talking about Zionism, it's not as taboo as it was probably back then. So I salute your fatigability on that one. But I have a website, joshuablakeney.info. I have a YouTube channel, Globalization1492 is the name of the YouTube channel. So Globalization1492. And I also have one called Non-Aligned Media. I just sort of started that recently. But my
Non-Aligned
main YouTube,
Media.
My main YouTube channel is Globalization1492. My website is joshuablakeney.info. I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page and a personal Facebook page that you can look for me. Facebook's banned me from adding friends right now. Apparently they know who I do know and don't know, which is quite interesting. So they decided to adding
friends. Well, we'll throw a link to the main one up on WRH, like, right after the show. I'll do that so people can know where to find you. And I'd love to come on Press TV or talk at a college or what have you, a little far away. But I can do the collaboration with you anytime, you know, on 9/11 or in the wars or what have you, Syria, etc. It's all one long story, really.
It's endless war and slavery. It's pretty Orwellian.
Yes, it is. Well, that's our show for today. Mike Rivera will be back on Monday. Thanks for being with me. Please call your senators, S2372. Support Open Beaches in North Carolina. Support Ron Paul. Support Occupy. Have a good day, everybody. Thanks, Josh.